Happy New Year, everybody, and that is right. This is MMA Sucker Radio here on MMASucker.com and MMACanada.net. Thank you for joining us. We took a bit of a hiatus there over the Christmas break, but we are back, and what better way to be back with our monthly State of the Union show, where we talk about all the hot topic and news, sort of the stuff that's been going on over the last few weeks. We get into it with a great roundtable, and tonight's no different. We have an awesome roundtable, actually one of my favorites. We've got Damon Martin from MMAweekly.com, and we got Danny Acosta from Fight Magazine joining us here in the roundtable. Of course, I got my producer next to me, Jeremy Brand, who, by the way, just let you guys quickly know, for our MMA Suck-A-Duel that we do every once in a while, for our third one, he went up against Lazy the Savage, okay, from Middle Easy. And you took it, Jeremy. You're now 3-0. Your picks were golden.
Who would have thought?
I had all kinds of confidence in you, man. And you took it in the main event. Frankie Edgar with the draw actually ended up because he hung on to the title. You ended up hanging on to the win. So
there
that
we
was
go.
Good. Yeah.
Should be a good video that he does, being a videographer and all.
Yeah, Lazy the Savage just quickly is going to have to make a video of him dressing up as Mayhem Miller, and he's going to walk into Cesar Gracie's gym in Stockton, California. He's going to video it all, and he's going to do a nice little production for us. So we're looking forward to that. Lazy, I know you're listening, so I'm don't be scared, homie. Yeah, just do it. I can't wait to see it, the rainbow hair and everything. But let's get on to our roundtable again. And again, we have Damon Martin from MMAweekly.com and Danny Acosta from Fight Magazine. First off, with the introduction, Damon, how are you doing?
I'm good.
Now, tell us a little bit about you, sort of what you're doing. And you also have a show, I believe, that's on Monday to Thursdays at 9 p.m. Eastern. Am I correct?
Yes, sir. I'm the lead writer over at MMAweekly.com. I've been there for about 6 years, and we do our radio show. I've been doing my show for just about a little under 5 years right now, MMAweekly.com, and we do our show from 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern time, Monday through Thursday, and we try to stack it up with a lot of guests, although no show this Tuesday night because I will be celebrating watching the Ohio State University win the Sugar Bowl.
Oh, okay. You're a college football guy. All right. Okay, good. Danny Acosta from Fight Magazine, why don't you tell us a little bit about you, sort of what you do there at the magazine there in Atlanta?
Well, hey, it's a pleasure to be here first and foremost, and it's always good to speak with Damon here. I'm actually based in San Francisco. The offices for our magazine are based in Atlanta, though.
Okay.
So I'm in the Bay Area, and I've been working with Fight since our third issue, and I'm the lead writer there. I wrote the October and November cover stories back-to-back, and hoping to get another one here in the new year. So, that's mostly my role, is doing on-camera interviews and stuff, event coverage when that time comes. And also I've been producing and writing these short mini documentaries that Rick Lee, our head of video content, and I produce together. So, it's exciting. It's a different way to tell stories. And so branching out to that now in addition to writing.
That's a pretty sweet gig. That's a full-time gig for you, I take it.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, and I actually do some radio shows as well. I do ESPN 1450 based in Reno with my friend Greg DeLong. Old school and new school is the premise of the show. He's about twice my age, so it's a good time. And I'm also doing a weekly segment starting here in 2011 on Sirius Satellite Radio, the Sirius Fight Club, and that's on Sirius 125.
Wow.
Really trying to ramp it up here in 2011, and everyone could follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/AcostaIsLegend.
Cool. Well, let's get right to it. I don't want to talk too much to you guys. I'm going to leave it to the experts today, and I'm just sort of going to mediate things. But every once in a while, I'll throw in my two bits as well. But let's get on with it. Let's go let's start off with yesterday, UFC 125 taking place in Las Vegas. You know, a few things coming out of this card. Overall, though, Damon, what did you think of the card?
I thought it was a good card. I thought it was a solid show overall. I thought the main event, of course, really lived up to, you know, well beyond what people thought it was going to live up to. I knew it had that kind of potential. Of course, disappointed ended in a draw. You never like to see that, and so we'll have to do it all over again. So that's kind of the downside of how great the fight was. But overall, I thought it was a really good card. You know, a lot of people weren't, you know, too high on the card, but I thought it was a great card. You know, matchup-wise, Brian Stann came out and looked great. Thiago Silva came out and looked great. I think we saw the end of a few UFC careers. So overall, I enjoyed the show a lot.
Danny, what did you think?
Yeah, you know, I thought it was a solid card. The card had a lot of things they had to battle through, you know, with Jose Aldo and that title fight being dropped off the card. Mm-hmm. But they really set it up, and I think the important thing is that they took the initiative to show us as much of the card as they could. I believe I ended up not seeing just two of the fights, you know, watching here from home. And so, that, you know, that's excellent. And the Eye on Television thing, you know, that worked out great, where fans are able to see the full depth of really how the UFC is running out. And I also really enjoyed the fact that they had a graphic that illustrated the fact that they're bringing in the 135 and 145 pound weight classes. So overall, I think, you know, the main event was one of the better title fights we've seen, and I absolutely think it was a draw. So it was a great card, you know, very exciting, a lot of storylines coming out of it.
Yeah, I noticed that on a production level at the UFC did that. They actually listed all their weight classes, including the new ones, and they had their champion for each one. I thought that was a really great move. And I'm actually starting to you know, even some of their promo for the next Anderson Silva fight with Vitor Belfort, and some of their promos for George St. Pierre and Josh Koscheck as well. Their promos and their are getting better, and it just seems like their production value, even though their production value is excellent, they're trying to put a little bit more into it. Do you not agree, Damon?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're doing a good job. They're putting, you know, kind of a different spin. I've said for a long time that the promos in the UFC, I think with any company, with any sport, you know, once it gets stagnant, people kind of get used to it. Mm-hmm. It's not as much fun. I thought the one they did with GSP and Koscheck was fantastic. The one coming up with, you know, Anderson and Vitor was good. So they're kind of amping it up and switching things up a little bit. Once they get rid of the Gladiator intro for the pay-per-views, then I think we'll be set.
Yeah, you know, I've been saying it for a long time now, ever since they really started changing, getting rid of the shadow boxing with the spritzing water, and they added those backlights. It really makes the fighters look more like stars. And, you know, I personally love to see the Red Hot Chili Peppers do the intro for the UFC. You know, Anthony Pierce is a big fan. He's at events quite often, and, you know, that's the kind of change. I agree with Damon, the glider thing's got to go. But, you know, the UFC, with the prime time, you know, that really says that there's the UFC and everyone else. You know, their production is constantly increasing, and, you know, it's really a pleasure to watch. It's really making even the smallest cards feel very large.
Yeah, absolutely. And as far as the introduction goes, I can understand some ways why the UFC hangs on to that, because it's sort of that traditional sound. But overall, though, I've been completely impressed with what they've been doing over, especially over in 2010 from a production standpoint. And there's no doubt they're leading the way for sure. Well, let's talk a little bit about UFC 125. And I want to go right off to the hottest topic that people have been talking about over the last 24 hours, is the main event being a draw. Before we get into sort of what's going to be happening in the fallout, we'll start here with Danny. Do you believe that fight was a draw between Gray Maynard and Frankie Edgar?
Yeah, I absolutely believe it was a draw. I gave Gray Maynard a 10-8 first round, and I gave him the third round, and I gave Frankie the second, fourth, and fifth round. You know, very close fight, and I think that's why it should be a draw. I think that while it's an unsatisfying outcome, it still is the right outcome. You know, this is about scoring and understanding the nuances of what constitutes a 10-8 round, and Gray Maynard definitely earned that in the first round. You know, very close fight. I could definitely see how Frankie Edgar may have taken that third round, but you know, this is the nature of the game. It's getting to such a high competitive level. You see fights like Benson Henderson and Anthony Pettis. You see fights like Gray Maynard and Frankie Edgar. You know, even getting as far back as Randy Couture and Pedro Hizo, which I think was the first really amazing five-round title fight. We've seen an amazing evolution over the course of this decade, and Gray Maynard and Frankie Edgar really proved that with a draw. And you know, from that perspective, I think I'm glad to see it.
Oh, I guess we lost. Danny still there? Danny, you there?
I'm here.
Okay. Awesome. Perfect. Thought we lost you there. Yeah, totally agree. Damon, your thoughts. You believe it was a draw?
I scored it for Gray Maynard, but I didn't have a problem with the draw. I gave Gray the first, third, and fifth, so I had him scoring within the fight. The first round, I guess I gave it a 10-8, although if there's ever going to be a 10-7 round, that was the round. I mean, he knocked him down three or four times. I mean, it was, you know, it could have been stopped, honestly. It could have been stopped at that point. I don't think anyone really would have complained. When you have that close of a stoppage, you know, that many times in a round, if you're ever going to have a 10-7 round, that was the round to have it in. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I scored the fight for Gray slightly, but, you know, the rounds were so close, the third and the fifth especially, that I don't really have a problem with the decision if it was a draw. I mean, honestly, it was so close the rest of the way that, you know, seeing a rematch is only going to put closure to it. So I'm completely okay with that, even though I scored the fight slightly in Gray Maynard's favor. But I have no problem with the rematch, and I had no problem with the draw.
Yeah, and you know, that's the interesting thing is you know, right after the fight, the UFC had mentioned that Anthony Pettis would get his shot at Frankie Edgar, but then Dana White quickly overturned that and said there will be an instant rematch. Danny, when do you think that might come down, and do you agree with that decision? Because really, the overall loser here in this draw was Anthony Pettis.
You know, I disagree. I think, especially given the you know, the rumor going around, and I haven't seen it confirmed, is that Anthony Pettis actually withdrew himself from the fight, said, you know what, Gray Maynard and Frankie Edgar should fight again. You know, that kind of humility, I think, is just going to grow his rapidly rising star. And not only that, you look at Cain Velasquez and the fact that he took 8 months before his title fight to prepare. You know, I think we'll see a similar time frame for Anthony Pettis. I'm pretty sure you could get Frankie Edgar and Gray Maynard, depending injuries, until they both came out healthy, you know, in there by, you know, the Toronto card in April. And if you're able to do that, then, you know, they may be able to find in August and September again. And, you know, that'll be, you know, 8 to 10 months for Anthony Pettis, who at 23 years old, shows incredible improvements in between every of his fights. So, you know, I think he'll be able to benefit from that long layoff to focus on his technique and prepare for the biggest fight of his life.
Mm-hmm. Damon, do you like that call?
Yeah, I mean, when they originally announced that Anthony Pettis was getting the shot, I kind of disagreed with it. You know, I'm a huge Anthony Pettis fan. He's a great kid, but I thought Gray Maynard deserved a rematch immediately, and now he's getting it. So Anthony will get his time. He'll get his shot. You know, it's going to take a little while longer, but he'll still get his shot. And, you know, even if the UFC opted to have him fight one more time, I don't think that's necessarily right. But, you know, if Anthony really wants to stay active and doesn't want to take the time off, I mean, that's up to him. But I definitely agree with the decision to give Gray Maynard an immediate rematch. And hopefully we'll see that fight, you know, maybe the Memorial Day card coming up May 28th, something like that, if they can put it together as quickly as possible. So hopefully we can see, you know, if it is Anthony Pettis, you know, October, maybe September, try to do a quicker turnaround.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the big benefit of this is that we're getting a trilogy fight. Mm-hmm. And the trilogy always means money and attention. You know, I would argue that this is really going to make the lightweight division the marquee division of the lower weight classes. And, you know, it's been the case, you know, where BJ Penn and Sean Sherk, you know, had a really high profitable fight that was almost a 500K pay-per-view sell. Well, you know, this is the kind of fight that's really going to take it to the next level, because now, having seen them in the cage together for 25 minutes, we really understand how excellent of a fight that is, how evenly matched these competitors are. And after seeing their emotions pour out in the post-fight press conference, you know, this is really a story that's compelling, and, you know, the potential even for a fourth fight. So I think it's excellent for the division. You know, it's going to create a backlog of contenders where you have Anthony Pettis, Clay Guida, the winner of Jim Miller and Kamal Chalarus, Sean Sherk, Evan Dunham. There are a lot of people who you could call a contender in this division now, and that's going to create clear contenders, and it's going to create a very exciting climb to the top. You know, it's going to create a lot of excitement for the division.
Damon, you agree?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I mean, unfortunately, the downside of this is that, you know, the lightweight division, you know, the grand plan, you know, they had the number one contender named, and of course he's now going to sit on the sidelines and wait. So I think that's the only downside of this is that, you know, best laid plans go to waste. But, you know, the trilogy is going to be huge. It's going to bring Gray and Frankie up to another level, and it's going to bring them into the spotlight even more than they already were, being a champion and the number one challenger. So it's going to be good, and it's also going to give time for the rest of the division, as Danny mentioned, to kind of shake itself out, because behind Anthony Pettis, you really don't have a number one contender besides maybe Jim Miller or George Sotiropoulos. You know, maybe match those two up if they're both successful and they become a number one contender. You kind of let the division define itself a little bit more while these three guys are kind of battling it out over the next, you know, basically in 2011.
Yeah,
you know, the name I left out is George Sotiropoulos, and Mark Bocek called for a fight with Sotiropoulos. Sotiropoulos has Dennis Seaver at 127, which is a very difficult fight, but I think a Bocek fight would also be an excellent grappling match and a way to keep George Sotiropoulos busy, see what Mark Bocek is made of. You know, while this thing shakes out, there are so many compelling fights, not to mention the influx of WEC lightweights, you know, even guys like your Park Belaszewski who will get in there and stand and bang and be competitive. You know, there's a lot going on in the lightweight division, I think more so than any time in history.
Oh, absolutely. It's stocked and ready to rock, for sure. Moving on here, guys. There was an interesting fight here between Brandon Vera and Thiago Silva. And, I thought Brandon Vera had an okay showing. But, man, Thiago Silva, what a return fight for him. He looked strong. He looked good. There was a little bit of slapping going on, some showmanship. John Jones didn't like it. Pretty much called Thiago Silva out. He wants a shot. First off, guys, we'll start here with Danny. What did you think of the fight? And what did you, you know, your thoughts on sort of the showboating?
It didn't really bother me too much. I didn't notice it the way that you do some of the other guys who showboat in there. Mm-hmm. I think Thiago Silva did have an excellent performance. Brandon Vera appeared to have the right mindset. You know, once Thiago started wearing him down and pounding him out, it seemed that Vera wasn't quite the same. But, you know, he fought hard to the end, and he looked much improved. It was very much a high-stakes fight for Brandon Vera. Just because he created such high expectations for himself, I think when you do that and you don't meet them, then, you know, you're on the chopping block more so than others. So it was pretty interesting to see how strong he came out. But, you know, Thiago Silva is a legitimate light heavyweight contender. You know, he lost Rashad Evans, but he had been injured, and he fought well. And then he fought excellent against Brandon Vera. I think a fight with John Jones would be excellent. You know, John Jones has a very tough opponent, Ryan Bader, coming up on Super Bowl Saturday. So, you know, who knows? But if that's a fight John Jones wants, if that's a fight Thiago Silva is obviously going to be welcome to, you know, I'd love to see it. This is another case of, you know, creating clear contenders, excitable guys who have win streaks, who could go in the title and really bring a big fan base and a lot of momentum going into the fight. Thiago Silva needs to get that time. You know, he's had a lot of shakeups in the octagon due to injury. So, you know, I want to see him mixing it up with the John Jones, Ryan Baders of the world. Hell, even a fight with Krzysztof Szyszynski.
Yeah, Damon?
I got to disagree a little bit with Danny about Brandon Vera's performance. I kind of made the joke on Twitter on Saturday night. I said, if Brandon Vera's back, he apparently came back as Ken Shamrock. Because he looked terrible. I mean, I thought he looked horrible. He did nothing in that fight. I mean, outside of that second round where he came out and kind of, you know, came out guns blazing and tried to strike with Thiago, he did nothing off his back. And, the slapping, that kind of stuff, yeah, I'm with John Jones. I think it's disrespectful. I don't think it's necessary. At the same time, the one thing I will say is, you know, open palm strikes, those are real things. I mean, obviously Joe Rogan talked about that with Boss Rutten. That's a real, you know, real legitimate thing. As far as dangerous strikes. The slapping, uncalled for, doesn't need to happen. But the one thing I will say, the only thing I'll say to defend it is, if you're getting slapped around, do something about it. You know, Brandon Vera did nothing about it. He laid there and got beat up and basically just sat there and took it. He didn't try to roll. He didn't. I mean, sometimes guys will put themselves in worse positions to try to get into a better position. He did nothing. My opinion, Brandon Vera is gone from the UFC. That's three losses in a row. That's kind of the precedent that's set. You know, for most guys, and he didn't look desperate in that fight. He didn't look, you know, he didn't look like he had to come out and win that third round or knock out Thiago Silva. Just do, you know, basically pull anything out of his bag of tricks to try to win that fight in the third round. Thiago Silva dominated him, and Brandon Vera at this point is a middle level light heavyweight who's collecting a very, very big payday. I think that is ultimately what's going to, you know, be the calling card for Brandon Vera to get his release from the UFC, is the fact that he's making a pretty good amount of money, and at this point he's nothing better than a prelim fighter.
Yeah, you know, that's the interesting part about it. It's Brandon Vera really wilting under pressure because he comes out and he's able to generate excitement for his performances the way that Kevin Randleman, Tito Ortiz, And those kind of fighters will sell you that every fight is going to be the one where they're back, and every fight is the one that you're going to see the old version of themselves. And then they really just mentally lapse out when the going gets tough. And I think that's really what we saw with Brendan Vera. You know, incredibly talented, but just not into the fight the way that a guy like Thiago Silva would be.
Yeah, and I also think, I mean, the other point to that is what, you know, Danny made is a good point about the guys coming back, you know, Krokop coming back, Tito coming back. The difference, in my opinion, is Krokop was an established star. He was a champion. Tito, of course, was the face of the UFC for a lot of years. Brandon Vera was never quite at that level. He came close. He was, you know, maybe a couple fights away from being a number one contender. And I think that's the difference. He doesn't get the same kind of leeway that a Tito Ortiz does, because Tito's going to bring in a crowd whether he's on a three-fight losing streak or on a 10-fight winning streak. He's still got a lot of fans. Brandon's got fans, but he's never been at the level of a Krokop or a Tito. He never got to the top of the sport. He never became a two-weight class champion or you know, beat a Chuck Liddell or any of that stuff to really define his career, and then he kind of fell off. He was always the guy who was supposed to be the next contender. He was supposed to be John Jones, except John Jones actually performed and showed up more often than Brandon Vera did.
Yeah. Damon, do you believe, though, that Brandon Vera is actually going to be cut? Because there seems to be a lot of love for a guy like Brandon Vera, and we've seen in the past Dana White has his favorites, and you could probably group Brandon Vera into that. I don't know for sure, but it just seems that way. Would you be surprised if he wasn't cut?
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be shocked, because they've kept a couple other guys that I thought were going to get cut, not because I agree with it. I mean, they kept Matt Brown, and everybody freaked out that they kept Matt Brown and they cut Gerald Harris. Now, I didn't agree with them cutting Gerald Harris either, but I understood why they kept Matt Brown. He's an exciting guy, win, lose, or draw. He's going to go out there and leave, you know, put it all in the octagon. Brandon Vera, I don't see that. You know, he's failed to show up for a few different fights, and again, I think a lot of this comes down to payday. I also know for the fact that with the UFC adding in the different weight classes and the additional fighters from the WEC, they're going to make some tough calls on some cuts. They're going to cut some guys that people are going to be like, wow, I can't believe he got cut. And I think Brandon Vera, at this point, he's got to. I mean, he's in the Keith Jardine train right now. He's got to go out and get some quality wins under his belt outside the UFC, get humbled a little bit, and then come back and you know, and show that he's got that fire back. Right now, he just doesn't have it.
Yeah. Moving along here, guys, some more fallout from UFC 125. Just give me your, we'll start here with Danny. Give us your quick synopsis of Brian Stann and the Chris Lieben fight.
You know, I thought it was an excellent performance. What he did well is employee strategy. It's a trademark of the Jacksons camp. You know, they know exactly what they're trying to execute when they get in there. And that's why he was able to make such short work of a very tough veteran like Chris Lieben. You know, there are a lot of holes in Chris Lieben's striking because he likes to brawl, and you know, he wants to go toe to toe with whoever he's standing across from. You know, however, Brian Stann was able to use a lot of good movement, and you know, this is a progression from his last fight. It's a progression from the Brian Stann was at WEC, and we're seeing someone who, with the marketability he has, being a genuine American hero, and really Brian Stann is someone who you can't help but be a fan of. I mean, everything that you know, he stands for and his service to the country, he really is one of the best marketable guys out there. And I think with this win, I'd like to see him face Chael Sonnen. You know, it'd be like the heel Kurt Angle facing the face Kurt Angle, you know. So I think that would be a good step for him, since Chael Sonnen is out of the immediate title picture. Brian Stann has shown a lot of improvement, and you know, he's calling out Vanderlei Silva. I think that's a great fight as well. But I'd like to see Chris Lieben get back in. It's fortunate that he was able to capitalize on the two-week back-to-back wins that he had against Aaron Simpson and Yoshi Akiyama. An amazing 2010 for Chris Lieben, unfortunately off to a tough start in 2011. I'd like to see Chris Lieben get in there and really maintain that he's at the top of the division by getting some solid wins.
Damon, any quick remarks on that fight at all?
Brian Stann looked phenomenal. You know, I thought he would do that. I thought he would win that fight. I thought he would catch Chris Lieben. He was so up for that fight, and Chris Lieben, if you kind of heard his pre-fight comments, just never sounded that into the fight. And, you know, and he also had a huge layoff between his fights in July and this one, and that's never good for Chris Lieben. You saw the unfortunate situation with his DUI. I like Chris a lot. He's a great guy, but he does tend to get himself into some issues when he's got a lot of time off. And, I think it all backfired in this fight. Brian Stann, like Danny said, is a phenomenal fighter, and we've seen the improvement he's made with Greg Jackson and Mike Winklejohn.
Awesome. Well, you're listening to MMA Sucker Radio. We're doing our State of the Union show, as you can hear, and we've got from MMAweekly.com, we've got Damon Martin, and from Fight Magazine, we've got Danny Acosta. And, of course, this is all brought to you by Clinch Custom Mouthguards. And, guys, quickly here before we go to a commercial break, I just want to get in a couple sort of noteworthy things. Moving away from UFC 125, we'll stay on a little bit here on UFC 125, the ION Network. First off, Danny, what do you know about this channel? We don't personally have it in Canada, up here in Canada, but in the United States, this was a big deal. The prelims were on this instead of Spike. Is the UFC, a question for you about, is the UFC moving away from Spike and maybe using this this sort of channel, this new channel, this ION channel, as sort of a way to start moving towards a UFC network? Do you see that?
You know, it's a difficult call. I think it's more so just a matter of television. It's very hard to negotiate when you're on a 365 schedule like the UFC. You know, Spike TV works really well with them, but, you know, it's not always the case that they have open spots. And ION, you know, I believe is a DirecTV kind of special channel where they've shown weigh-ins. You know, I usually catch the weigh-ins there if I'm not at the event. So, you know, it's just another progression. I think it's more about just getting the fights to the fans any way possible and keeping that brand out there and constantly pumping it out there. And I think ION was something where they could have came together. And as far as the UFC television network, I see that happening in the future, but I don't know how much ION would be involved.
Yeah, Damon?
You know, ION was kind of a necessary evil. I think they wanted to get a deal done really quick, and ION was available. And obviously, as most people know, ION, you know, I think is the lowest-rated broadcast television network of any that's out there. So, of course, they're going to basically, you know, cater to the UFC. They're going to give the UFC whatever they want. And so they could get a deal done, like, really quickly. Like Danny mentioned, TV negotiations are tough, and I think that also plays into the Spike TV thing. You know, they're renegotiating for a new deal with Spike. They're eventually going to come out with the UFC network down the road, but again, that's a long, long process. It's not something that's going to happen overnight. So, you know, it was a quick deal. I don't think it's going to be something that's going to be seen regularly. I mean, I don't even have ION, so I didn't even get to see, you know, the program a lot. I mean, I know Dana made a big deal about it being in 100 million homes, and that's great, but it's missing in a lot of major cities. I mean, it's missing a lot of places in Ohio. It's missing a lot of places in Pennsylvania. You know, a lot of major cities are not getting ION. So, you know, that number, you know, yeah, there's 100 million people, but where are those 100 million people?
Well, Damon, then, why didn't the UFC put it on Spike? Like, what did Spike have to, you know,
well,
what, you know, what was the schedule like? Like,
sometimes when Dana says stuff, you have to learn to read between the lines of what he's saying. What Dana said over and over again was, is we have so many prelim cards we can do a Spike per year, and we didn't have anything open. Now, it's the beginning of the year. It's 2011. Technically, if that's a new contract and we're going to play it by calendar year, we're going to assume that the year has started over with them. Mm-hmm. What that boils down to for me is that's a negotiating tactic. That's saying instead of, you know, 8 prelim cards a year, we want 12, but we're only going to pay X amount of dollars or whatever. That, again, read between the lines of what Dana's saying.
Yeah.
And when he keeps saying over and over and over again that, you know, we can only have so many prelim cards a year. Well, that just reads out to me to say that, you know, they want us to have 8, we want 12, or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, moving away from that, guys, last subject here before we go to a quick commercial break. This was huge news. Chuck Liddell finally retires, and I just want to get your thoughts on this. Danny, were you surprised by this announcement, or did you hear rumblings about this before it was announced?
No, you know, it's just the sentiment that you got from Chuck Liddell after the Franklin fight. You know, having to grapple with that decision, and, you know, I think it was just time for Chuck. You realize that, you know, he's being knocked out, and I think he's doing the right thing here because he's establishing a precedent. And that, you know, if you're taking that kind of damage, if you're constantly getting knocked out, and, you know, no matter how long and how tenured you've been in the sport, there is a time to walk away before your health becomes a risk. So I think it's great that someone, you know, probably the greatest 205 pounder who ever lived, is walking away before, you know, it gets even messier. So I think it's good the UFC is making this position for him. Hopefully they have a willingness to work with fighters once their career is done. Obviously, Chuck is a special case, being the face of the UFC for a very, very long time. However, you know, you'd like to see them keep as many guys around as possible, because there are many employment positions. Guys are college educated. You know, this is that sport. They have a lot of things they can bring to the table. And with the UFC expanding, you know, getting their own TV network in the future, whatever it may be, you want to see the guys who helped pave the road with the blood, sweat, and tears they put into this sport really get paid off. So I think it's excellent the UFC is keeping Chuck Liddell around in that capacity.
Damon, do you see Chuck staying retired, or do you got a sneaky feeling like I do, he may get back in the octagon one more time?
No, I think he's done. I mean, Dana has said for a long time he wasn't fighting, and I think it just came down to Chuck finally realizing that he wasn't going to get back in there and fight again. He's not going to go fight for another organization or anything.
No.
He's got the money. I mean, it's just the desire to fight.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, I think he's done. You know, and I think that the other thing that's really odd that hasn't really been talked about, you know, very, very much, is that, you know, with our sport being, you know, at this point, you know, 15, 16, 17 years old, we're just now seeing some of the icons of our sport, you know, calling it a career. You know, Chuck Liddell really is one of the first, because I guess technically Hoist Gracie is still out there wanting to fight, and somehow Ken Shamrock still gets fights. But, you know, guys are starting, you know, Randy Couture, obviously it's going to be coming soon. You know, Chuck Liddell, you know, we're kind of reaching that stage where we're the Michael Jordans and the, you know, the Joe Montanas of our sport are starting to call it a career, and we're going to find new stars and new guys to carry us forward. I think it's kind of an intriguing little, you know, side plot to that.
You know, I think that's an important point that Damon brings up, because we don't want to see MMA take the road of pro wrestling, where the stars who are, you know, old and gray and not able to compete at the same level are, you know, pushed further, rather than the young guys like John Jones and Ryan Bader, who are proven that they could belong and carry the torch at the high levels.
Absolutely. And you know what? It sucks to see Chuck Liddell hang it up, because I was a big fan, but you know, when you get knocked out as many times as he was and just continues to lose fights, you know, it's good that the UFC stepped up and gave him a pen-pushing job. It'll be interesting to see what he does with it. And a lot of people forget that, you know, good old Chuck Liddell was never just a fighter. He actually had a degree in business, I believe, in accounting or something like that. Was that right? Is that right, Damon? He had an accounting degree, business degree,
yeah,
something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, he was technically a CPA. He was actually an accountant. That was actually his actual, you know, role.
Yeah. Oh, so, you know, he has some business acumen, and, you know, that's great to see. We're going to be back here with State of the Union here on MMA Sucker Radio on MMAsucker.com and MMAcanada.net. We're just going to do a quick commercial break. And when we come back, more topics with Damon Martin and Danny Acosta here on State of the Union.
Authority. Rule. Control. This is what is meant by dominance. Only a select few can climb the mountain. Hard work, sweat, and blood are what is left on the mats. You leave your entire being in the cage and ring, all for that one chance to be called champion. There are no moral victories, only casualties. Are you ready to stand your ground? Go to DominantGround.com and prepare yourself for war. DominantGround.com. Be dominant. You're listening to State of the Union, only on MMA Sucker Radio. Brought to you by Clench Custom Mouth Guards. Watch your mouth.
Welcome back to State of the Union here on MMA Sucker Radio on MMAsucker.com and MMAcanada.net. And as you heard, the show tonight is brought to you by Clench Custom Mouth Guards. Are you tired of wearing those cheap oil and bites? Whether you're a martial artist, play hockey, football, or any sport requiring a mouth guard, why not have one that fits comfortably and has some style? Clench creates custom mouth guards that fit your mouth perfectly. They will mail you a mouth casting kit where you can take an indentation of your teeth, tell them what you want, put it on the guard. I know producer Jeremy, he has a sweet ass on his mouth guard. It's pink, little rainbows. It's nice. I have an MMAsucker.com mouth guard and I love it. I've never worn a more comfortable guard in my life. Go to clinchcustomguards.com and check them out, or go to dominantground.com and buy your kit today. Clinch Custom Mouth Guards. So there you go. And by the way, I really do honestly love my mouth guard, and you know, it's probably pretty important to wear something that's, you know, stay in your mouth. Might be kind of important. But what else is important is moving along here with State of the Union. And we were just talking about a little bit about Chuck Liddell retirement. We're going to move on to UFC, and we're going to go up north here to Canada with the UFC Toronto show, because there's been a couple of fights. Obviously, this is a big show for the people in Toronto and in Canada, but this is a huge show for the UFC. They're probably going to break every attendance record that they've... they are going to break probably their attendance record that they've had. I mean, that's probably, let's see, 65,000 people, producer Jeremy, could probably fit into that arena. So I've heard they're doing, when we had Tom Wright on the show, they're probably looking at about 40,000 is what they're going to make that arena to. And so UFC Toronto. Danny, I'll start with you. I've heard Shields versus St. Pierre, Machida versus Couture. Just give us your thoughts on that show coming up in March. And what other fights would you like to see on that card?
I'd like to see Graeme Maynard and Frankie Edgar rematch on that card. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the time frame could work. It'll be a quick turnaround, but you know, these guys are wrestlers. They have that mentality that they could bring it back right around. And so I like to see that on there. I think if you have that, the Jake Shields, George St. Pierre fight, and the Randy Couture, Leon Machida fight, then that alone is mm-hmm. going to be a card that will really pack a 40,000-seat stadium. You know, two title fights, I think, is the max you want to go. Having a marquee fight like Leon Machida and Randy Couture absolutely raises the stakes there. So those are the fights I'd like to see. And I don't care when it happens, but if this just happened in 2011, is Clay Guida and Benson Henderson.
Yeah. No, that, yeah, absolutely. That would be great. Damon, what do you, what would you like to see on this card? And, you know, this is going to be probably the biggest show in UFC history. What do you see the UFC doing with this?
Well, you know, the show's April 30th in Toronto, and I agree 100% with Danny. That's plenty of time. I mean, assuming that, you know, assuming that Gray and Frankie are uninjured, and I hope to talk to both of them this week and find mm-hmm. out, but assuming they're both uninjured, you know, you take a few weeks off. You could probably take most of January off, and you still get a full, you know, 8 to 10 week camp right after that to get ready for a fight at the end of April, and we're literally 4 months away. So, I mean, that's plenty of time. So I'd love to see that. I think they're going to try to make this a monster deal. I mean, I think... You know, GSP Shields is going to be huge, and I think they were going to aim for Cain Velasquez and Junior Dos Santos. We know now that's not going to happen. So, no. Frankie Edgar and Gray Maynard makes a lot of sense. Unless, you know, Jose Aldo can be back and they have somebody in mind for him. I think we're going to see a second title fight of somebody, but we know it's not going to be, you know, certain divisions are not going to be in there. And, you know, I know Dominic Cruz is going to have the surgery on his hand, so he's going to be out for about 4 to 6 months. So, again, it's not going to be him. So it's either going to be the lightweight title fight or possibly Jose Aldo. But I think they're going to make this, you know, as big as UFC 100. I mean, they're doing a UFC Fan Expo. Mm-hmm. You know, they plan on selling out, like you said, 40,000 seats. I mean, they're going to make this a monstrously huge deal. And so I'm seeing, you know, like I said, another title fight, GSP and Shields, Couture and Machida. And they're going to stack this one up pretty deep.
Yeah. And because this is at the end of April, and because this is, I mean, it's such a big card, do you actually see, and Damian, maybe you can answer this, the UFC doing more of these type of shows, these big arena shows, or do you think this is just going to be a one-off, or maybe they're doing this, I mean, there's been talks about doing a big show in Dallas. Do you see the UFC going this way more often?
I mean, I think it's when the opportunity presents itself. You know, they work so long and so hard to get Toronto done, to get Ontario done. They're going to make a huge deal out of the Ontario card. You know, just like UFC 100, you know, they made a big deal out of that because it was 100. You know, it just depends on the timing and things like that. I mean, I could see Dallas being a big deal down the road. You know, timing plays out and they make a big deal out of it. I don't think it's anything that I'd want to say is regular. I mean, I think it's just a matter of the timing, the right deals getting done. I mean, when mm-hmm. New York finally gets done, you know, I think they'll make a monstrously huge deal out of Madison Square Garden, you know, just because that's going to be the magnitude of that show. Again, I think it's timing and just the situation.
Yeah, yeah. Awesome. Going away and from that card, and trust me, I want to be at that one very, very badly. Brock Lesnar rumors. He was in the news over the last couple weeks. Rumors circulating that he wants out of his UFC contract, that he could be looking to go back into wrestling. I thought these rumors had gone away, but I guess they're back. And talks about him going and fighting at WrestleMania. Danny, just sort of, what are you hearing about this? And, you know, are those rumors accurate, or is it just sort of hearsay?
Yeah, you know, I think it's more along these lines of hearsay. Brock Lesnar is a real competitor, you know, and that's why he sought out the UFC in the first place, and he's made a lot of money doing it. He's got another fight he has to fulfill on his contract, likely a trilogy fight with Frank Mir, and that'll be very lucrative for him. I think the real thing to consider here is that Brock Lesnar left pro wrestling on a bad note. You know, it was kind of everything between him and the World Wrestling Entertainment. And mm-hmm. also, you know, that represents a negative time in his life. He's talked openly about, you know, the road and how difficult that was for him and what kind of person it made him. And I think he's really found his niche in MMA and will stick with it. So I don't really see validity to the rumors. I think it has a lot to do with the UFC 121 and the Undertaker confrontation that happened outside the cage. But, you know, outside of that, I don't see it as any kind of legitimate concern.
Damon, are you buying it?
Yeah, I'm not buying the fact that he's going to go do any of the WWE stuff. I mean, A, he's under contract with the UFC. Mm-hmm. They're not going to let him go do that. Also, the other point to that is that, you know, even if he fought the last fight in his contract, you know, they have that, you know, non-compete clause with most of their athletes, especially with someone of the stature of a Brock Lesnar, so he's not going to be able to do anything with anybody else for whatever those things are, usually 9 months to a year. So I don't see pro wrestling being anything, you know, that he's going to do. And, you know, I used to work around the pro wrestling industry. You know, Brock was always kind of seen as an outsider who just never really got along with people, you know, never tended to be a real popular guy in the backstage. He kind of kept to himself. And, you know, kind of same in the MMA world. He's just, you know, he's kind of a homebody and doesn't really like the other parts of the scene. And so, you know, I don't see him doing any of that. You know, could he walk away after one more fight? Sure. I mean, you know, I think that's a possibility just because if he loses or he just doesn't have that fire anymore, you know, the guy's got enough money to retire right now. And trust me, if that's, you know, if it's just boiling down to him just not having the passion for the sport anymore, maybe he'll walk away. But I don't see pro wrestling being in his future.
No. And I find it hard to believe that he would actually walk away after the loss to Cain Velasquez, because, you know, from everything that I've heard and what we've seen, Brock Lesnar is a pretty prideful guy. He doesn't like to lose. He doesn't take losing well. We saw it when he lost his first bout against Frank Mir. Damon, do you see Brock Lesnar coming back and you know, in the near future, and where do you see sort of him fitting right now in the heavyweight division? I mean, basically, what matchup would you like to see?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, what's been talked about is him and Frank Mir 3. I mean, that fight makes a lot of sense. Frank's coming off a couple wins. Brock's coming off a tough loss. You know, last time they fought, Brock basically destroyed Frank Mir. So it makes a lot of sense for that third fight. You know, and right now, you know, it's really the only fight that makes any sense mm-hmm. unless they're going to put Junior Dos Santos in there to fight Frank Mir just to give him to do, because, you know, as you know, Junior's not going to wait the time for Cain Velasquez to come back. He's going to fight again. With Roy Nelson kind of on the shelf right now with his whole contract situation, and we don't know for sure when Shane Carwin's going to be coming back, you know. But I think Lesnar and Mir makes a lot of sense, and I'd love to see Carwin and Dos Santos myself.
Damon? Any matchup you'd like to see?
It's a tough one. You know, Roy Nelson is someone who I think still has contender implications if he gets back in there and gets a rebound victory. But, you know, it's really difficult. I think the division isn't too tough off with Cain being out 6 to 8 months. You know, we've needed longer for title fights, and Junior Dos Santos is the challenger. You know, I don't really see anyone that could be a viable fight for him, maybe outside of a Shane Carwin, but, you know, he's coming off a loss as well, and you don't want to ruin your one good contender by, you know, unless it's something that Junior Dos Santos wants. I think the heavyweight division just needs to wait for contenders to emerge and, you know, try to make matchups that make sense where you get guys like Frank Mir and, you know, the staples of the division like Nogueira, some quality wins where, you know, they might be back in contender implications.
Yeah. With the Cain Velasquez injury, there's been some talk about an interim title. Do you guys feel that that'd probably be the right move, or because it's only 8 months? I mean, we've done this before. Do you think then that they will just sort of wait it out? We'll start with let's go Damon this one. Damon, you can lead off.
I don't. I don't want to see an interim title. I hate
Neither
interim
do I.
titles. I don't think they should ever have one.
No.
I understand when Brock was out and, you know, they had to, you know, but we saw what happened. I mean, Brock came back right after that interim title fight. I mean, we knew Brock was coming back right before Mir and Carwin fought.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's kind of one of those situations where it's like you almost hate to, you know, because it just makes no sense. And especially with, you know, the things that get muddled up, you know, just like what happened with Saturday night, you know, Frankie Edgar and Gray Maynard, the perfect scenario was the winner would come out and Anthony Pettis would get the next shot and maybe that fight could be on the Toronto card. Well, guess what? Now it's a draw. Anthony's got to sit out. I mean, it's, you know, I kind of agree with what Reed Harris used to say in the WEC. If every question anyone would ask him about what's next, he would always say, well, let's just wait and see until after the fight. And you know, it kind of frustrated reporters because we, of course, want the story to say, you know, this guy's the number one contender or this is the implication of this fight. But in all honesty, you just don't know. And so sometimes these plans of, you know, number one contenders and you know, championship bouts, when they don't happen, you know, if you put an interim title on Junior Dos Santos and he wins his next fight, then, you know, maybe he gets injured. And so the next guy that fights Cain Velasquez, it's just a mess. And you don't need to see it. So, no, we don't need an interim title.
Danny, you were just mentioning some of the guys that are in the UFC heavy division who are out or dealing with an injury, obviously, or dealing with legal issues. How has this division, which in 2010 was probably the most exciting division in the UFC, and that's just my personal opinion, but I just thought there was so much intrigue with Velasquez, DeSantos, the Lesnar mystique. Now, all of a sudden, the UFC finds themselves with a heavyweight division to begin 2011, which is pretty much in disarray. If you had to pick over the next few months here a couple of heavyweight fights that you'd like to see sort of kick things off while we wait for this to sort of, you know, be corrected, what would you like to see?
You know, there's the talk of the Brendan Schaub Mirko Krokop fight. I think that's a good one. And that Brendan Schaub's a young star who has a good style matchup versus Krokop, who carries a lot of name recognition. You know, I'd like to see Stepan Struve get in there and get another tough fight. You know, he's been fighting tough guys consistently. So it's really a matter of continuing to work with guys and get them fights consistently, so we see guys, you know, move clear on the path for the title. I don't think that there's a need for an interim title at all. Mm-hmm. You know, 8 months is plenty of time. You have a solid number one contender. It's about building guys behind that number one contender. You know, we don't need Jared just to step in there. We have Cain Velasquez, who's the best man on the planet. There's still a lot of interesting things that could happen. I think Frank Mir, Brock Lesnar is absolutely necessary in terms of keeping excitement in that division. And, you know, Brock Lesnar beating Frank Mir, you know, could put him right back in there for the title. So, you know, it's just a matter of how bad Brock wants it. It's just a matter of how bad Frank Mir wants it. You know, those are, I think, the two guys behind Junior Dos Santos who could still get in there and be competitive and sell a fight.
Speaking of Frank Mir and Brock Lesnar, Danny, any thoughts on, or I guess there's rumors that they could be on the next Ultimate Fighter show. Have you heard anything about that, and how realistic do you think that is?
You know, I think that Dana White and the UFC are having fun. Rumors are so rampant in this media that, you know, you see it all the time, that there's a bunch of false reports, and I think Brock Lesnar and Frank Mir isn't necessarily a false report, but I think, you know, it's just one of many options being put out there. So I don't see it happening because Brock Lesnar is so secretive. You know, there's a lot of talk about him not really allowing the primetime crew the access that they needed when they were filming that series. And, you know, after a loss, there's going to be a lot of questions about what kind of camp he's running and, you know, what kind of mindset Brock Lesnar is in. I don't see him wanting to leave Minnesota, leave his family. You know, he's very much a sheltered individual who lived a lot of his life in the spotlight and wants to get away from it. So I really don't see him coaching opposite of Frank Mir.
Damon, the Ultimate Fighter, is it still relevant? And your personal opinion as far as who you'd like to see as coaches?
It's still relevant simply because, you know, guys come off that show and they're still, I mean, look at George Sotiropoulos and look at Gray Maynard right now. I mean, those are guys that were, you know, season five and I believe season six, you know, right there who are, you know, in contenders or could be champions. So, you know, it does take guys time to develop, but the show's still very relevant. And just like we saw with last season, George St. Pierre and Josh Koscheck, I mean, they, you know, despised each other, and it really built up a great, great, you know, hype for their title fight, even though it ended up being pretty much a blowout. But leading into it, it was a great hype. So it's still big. I mean, personally, I wanted to see Uriah Faber and Dominick Cruz as coaches. You know, it's a great rivalry. They, you know, they do not like each other, and I think it would have been great to introduce them to the fans. But I think the concern there is, of course, the people that don't already know them, how are the ratings going to go? Basically what Danny said with Brock, I mean, could they get him in there? Sure. I mean, you know, you pay enough, you know, you pay a guy enough money, I'm sure he'd get in there and do it. And at this point, it kind of makes the most sense, but I agree 110% with what Danny said, that, you know, Brock Lesnar is a very private guy. He doesn't like to be away from his family. I can't see him up and moving to Vegas for 8 weeks. I just can't see him doing it, unless they're going to have the Ultimate Fighter Minnesota or something. You know, I just can't see them doing that. So I don't know. I mean, honestly, at this point, I'm not sure. I still think, even though Dana tried to downplay it, I still think we could see Chael Sonnen and Wanderlei Silva. I think we could still see, you know, Frank Mir and Roy Nelson, which would be intriguing and kind of odd, but kind of fun. So, you know, who knows? I mean, at this point, I don't really have an educated guess.
Yeah, and but I mean, I'm sure they're going to have to decide pretty shortly.
Yeah, you know, it's a tough thing to pick a coach. You know, it's a very high-profile thing that's supposed to build a huge fight. So, you know, who knows how it's going to go. Hey, yeah. Maybe we might even see Frankie after Cream Maynard in there.
Actually, it wouldn't be bad, actually. I didn't think of that. That's actually a good one. Moving away from the UFC guys here and sort of talk about the Dynamite card that just happened. Just give us your thoughts on, first off, we'll go with Damon on this one. Damon, your thoughts on the card, and was it enough to keep sort of FEG afloat as far as K1 and Dream?
I mean, I don't know the financial behind-the-scenes stuff for Japanese MMA and the, mm-hmm. the financial problems they're having, because I have no idea what they're doing with their money. I mean, they're still bringing in thousands upon thousands of people. I don't know about the TV deals and their commercial deals and their sponsorship deals. You know, they don't go public with that kind of stuff, so I have no clue how their money problems are. Personally, my opinion of the Dynamite show, as a person that did stay up for, you know, 7 hours and watch the thing, is I wish I had 7 hours of my life back. The show was, I mean, it wasn't very good. I mean, the production was awesome. I love the Japanese shows for that. I love the intros and the, you know, Lynn Hart doing the crazy screaming intros and that kind of stuff, the pageantry of it all, but the fights themselves were, I thought, pretty terrible. You know, Alistair Overeem blasted through Todd Duffy, kind of what we expected. You know, Kawajiri had a great performance against Josh Thompson, but again, he was on 2 weeks' notice. You know, the Bibiano Fernandez Takaya fight was, I thought, terrible. And then, you know, we just saw a lot of mismatches and just not intriguing fights, in my opinion. I didn't enjoy the show very much. And, you know, I mean, what does it say about the state of Japanese MMA? I don't know. I don't know the culture of you know, they like the freak show matches. They like the weird matchups. I don't. And like I said, if I had 7 hours to get back in my life, I wouldn't even watch that show.
Were you impressed, Damon, with Aoki?
No, that was the you know, that was the, one of the biggest jokes of the night. I mean, he went out there and basically made a mockery of the first round and kind of got what he had coming to him in the second. You know, he went out there and screwed around, and then when it got to the MMA round, he got, you know, he got knocked in the head and got knocked out, and, you know, kind of deservedly so after that first round. So again, you know, it was just a mess, and, yeah, and like I said, I did not enjoy it at all.
Yeah, Danny.
You know, it's a difficult one because I feel that there's a lot of potential in Dynamite, and, you know, it didn't play out with the most excitement, but, you know, there's still some things to take away. You know, they have a fight with Fabiano Fernandez and Takaya that was absolutely underwhelming and disappointing, but, you know, now you have those guys at 1-1. So, you know, you can have a trilogy fight there. I think the Overeem fight proved nothing. You know, you wonder when Alistair Overeem's going to start fighting real considerable heavyweights, and hopefully we see that in 2011. Josh Thompson, Kawajiri, you know, I think Damon said it all. Great performance by Kawajiri, but, you know, how much can you take away from that, given that Josh Thompson's only given 2 weeks' notice or 3 weeks' notice? And that's really the most upsetting part of it because, you know, that's a high-quality, world-class fight, and you really judge the scope of how true it is. And because the Japanese tend to play favorites like that, you know, those are kind of the little shady things that they do that prevents them from really taking their presence on the MMA scale globally to the, you know, next level.
Yeah. I honestly miss the Pride days, and I have a tough time watching K1 or Dream. I'll still watch a Dream fight occasionally, but personally, I've lost a little bit of interest in the Japanese scene, and maybe that's just because, I don't know, I just haven't seen, like with the Dynamite card, some real interesting matchups, and so it's going to be really interesting to see what happens in 2011 for Dream and K1. I still think K1 is still, you know, very exciting if you like kickboxing, and so, you know, people who haven't watched a K1 fight out there, you know, tune in once in a while. It's obviously different than MMA, but it has a lot of excitement, and hopefully Overeem will actually defend his Strikeforce title in 2011, which leads me to our next topic is Strikeforce. What do you guys see for Strikeforce in 2011, and what would you like to see, Damon?
I'd like to see some heavyweights actually fight. They have a stacked weight class at heavyweight, and they've basically done nothing with it. Mm-hmm. They have, Fedor negotiations. I said a couple weeks ago on Twitter, and everyone freaked out when I said this, and I had a lot of people agree with me, but I said they should release Fedor. They should be done with the Fedor situation, get rid of him, because obviously if they can't negotiate with M1 after a loss and the kind of mystique of Fedor has been ruined, then what are they going to really get out of him, going forward? I mean, Fedor's career, unfortunately, has become a joke over the last couple of years, and it's sad because I'm probably one of the biggest Fedor fans there's ever been, but it's just not, he's just not an intriguing heavyweight right now. They need to get some heavyweights in there to fight. And then they got exciting fighters in there. I mean, they got Paul Daly, they got KJ Nunes, they've got, Fabricio Werdum, they've got guys, they just need to get them in there and fight. I think doing the show in March at the Arnold's around, when the UFC usually went there, I thought was a great move. I thought the UFC leaving there was a mistake, not only because I'm from Ohio, but also because, it's a guaranteed crowd. I mean, you've got hundreds of thousands of people in town for the Arnold Classic, and to just kind of throw that away for any choice just didn't make sense to me. So Strikeforce kind of swooped in and got that. I thought that was great. And, it's just a matter of making decisive moves with their company. And, instead of letting guys kind of – right now I think Strikeforce's biggest problem is they let the fighters dictate a lot. This guy doesn't want to fight this guy, or this guy's got contract problems, or, Diaz and Miller won't do the catch weight and blah, 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 blah. They just need to put their foot down, and say, look, this is what's going to happen, or you're not going to fight, or, whatever. They need to make some, decisions and make them stand. And right now I think that's the biggest problem.
Danny. Yeah, I'm going to have to disagree with Damon here on him cutting Fedor. I know, obviously, that's a pretty radical stance, so I'm not going on a limb here. But I think that's representative of an issue with Strikeforce. That'd be like them blaming someone else for their problem, which we've seen in the past with them burying Jake Shields on their broadcast, after he wasn't necessarily promoted as their champion and pushed really hard. So it doesn't make sense for them to do that. I think they do have a lot of potential, but as Damon said, they need to be assertive. Strikeforce really doesn't run their company like a fight league. And the reason I say that is because, there's not a clear playoff kind of structure the way the UFC runs things. And, I've cut Strikeforce a lot of slack. I'm from the Bay Area, so I've been following the organization since they came up. And I thought they had a great 2009, and they had a terrible 2010. And the reason is, they were non-committal about things, and they're really a television product more than a fight league at this point. Because when you only have four main card fights on every one of your events, then you're not going to build future stars. And I've seen that they're relying on established stars and bringing those guys in, which is a terrible formula because you're not cultivating your own stars. You're relying on star power from elsewhere where, it's mostly just hardcore fans who know. And, you're not really helping invest in your future. Guys like Tarek Sedafine and Lyle Beerbaum and Justin Wilcox and other guys who are in the organization who are really promising aren't getting the proper showcases. Especially with guys like Fancy Pants and Tarek Sedafine, who have to go elsewhere to find fights just to stay active. I think that's a consequence of them having only four fights on their main card. And the Challenger Series has to go. I think there's no benefit of that. They need to establish a solid brand before they could have any kind of feeder organization within its own brand. It makes no sense to me. I feel like they're wasting airtime on Showtime. It's, pretty precious. I'd rather see 12 amazing Strikeforce events a year than, 20 that vary in quality, especially when you look at the dips they had, the challenges they faced this year. They went and established Nick Diaz as their welterweight champion in January, and didn't have a major card again until April, when Gilbert Melendez and Jake Shields and Muhammad Lawal won the titles on CBS. You know, that's a two-month space where the UFC is packing three or four cards in. You're generating no excitement. You know, look at the Dan Henderson-Babalu fight. You know, the last fight before that was Nick Diaz and KJ Nunes on October 9th. You go all the way to December 4th, and there's hardly any peep until the fight week of the fight actually happening. You know, so they really have to step up their promotional push to be competitive as an MMA organization. You know, they have a great platform, and I feel like they're spoiling it. And there's a lot of things they could do in 2010, and those are just some of the problems that I think need to be addressed. Sorry to go on a long rant, but you asked me about Strikeforce, and that's what happens, you know?
Yeah, no, and Danny, keeping on that rant, because do you feel that maybe that, I mean, this is, again, rumor, but I've heard it from a lot of different sources, that maybe Scott Coker has lost a little bit of control to the Showtime executives, and that maybe, like you were saying, it's run more like a television show. Do you feel maybe that has a lot to do with Showtime?
Yeah, I absolutely feel that's the case. And the reason is they re-signed Crazy Horse Bennett, and he was supposed to fight KJ Nunes at some point. And that just reeked of Elite XC. It reeked of Showtime getting into the fight business they don't necessarily understand fully and aren't willing themselves to commit fully. You know, they really don't do much in ways of promotion. They kind of think the audience will come on its own. You know, they're promoting more of a boxing style card. You know, they seem to think that you could promote one side of a fight and not the other guy, and that's not how it works in the sport. You know, this sport is about who you're matched up against, and that's what's beautiful, and they're kind of missing that point. I definitely think that, you know, Scott Coker has done a great job over the years. He's a very experienced promoter, but yeah, he's not necessarily taking the reins as he should or has the ability to. It's very unfortunate, but, you know, there's still a lot of hope for Strikeforce, and I think one of the biggest things they need to do is really consolidate their Japanese relationship. That was something that generated a lot of excitement, you know, the first time that a North American organization was really going to have a working relationship with Japanese organizations. No matter that the landscape had changed and it wasn't the same, it was still very key for the growth of their organization and also to bolster the Japanese organizations at a time of need. You know, why not send guys like Justin Wilcox and Tarek Sadafin to fight in Dream? That way, you know, when you can't get them a fight because you're only running four main card fights on your events, and they're still able to be seen. You know, I think they need to work out a deal to get Dream and or Sengoku, start working with them, and get those fights on Showtime rather than M1. I don't know why they're wasting their time with them. They really need to find what their bread and butter is. And I think the best contenders are in co-promotion for their champions. I think that Jacare to fight Jorge Santiago, first and foremost. I think that's an amazing fight that's being overlooked. Hector Lombard would also be an excellent champion to challenge Jacare, and you know, those are the kind of things that Strikeforce is going to need to do to really set the bar and establish themselves, is be willing to co-promote.
Yeah. Damon, you want to add to that at all?
Yeah, I mean, listen, you know, I agree that, you know, Showtime unfortunately does run a lot of the show behind the scenes. You know, I ran into it personally at one of the shows. I won't tell the story, but I ran into some issues with that. So I know that it does go on. And, you know, it does create a problem here and there. You know, I mean, the co-promotion, I agree that it's there. I mean, I think, you know, George Santiago and Jacare Souza would be a phenomenal fight. I'd love to see that fight. You know, but at the same time, I think it's just a matter of, you know, again, you know, the indecision is what's killing them. I mean, you know, not making the ultimate decision, whether it's Showtime, Strikeforce, CBS, I don't really care who makes the decision. Make some decisions and stick by them. I mean, we've got Nick Diaz fighting... you know, Cyborg coming up. That fight makes no sense to me. I mean, you know, Cyborg has no business being in a fight with Nick Diaz, and you're trying to sell that as a title fight. You know, you got Paul Daly, who's a top 10 welterweight sitting there, who could be fighting, you know, just, you know, keep Diaz out for a couple of months. KJ Nunes and Nick Diaz, it was a big rematch, but again, it really shouldn't have happened simply because KJ Nunes isn't a welterweight. He's never been a welterweight. You ask him to go up for his first welterweight fight, he's going to fight for the title. Again, that reeks of Showtime. There's decisions being made that I don't agree with, and I think, you know, ultimately it's putting your foot down, making some decisions, making some fight decisions, and you know, making sense of things. And like what Danny said earlier, you know, get some of these young guys, Tyron Woodley, you know, Daniel Cormier, get some of these guys in these main fights. Give them the chance to shine, because you're not going to last forever on, you know, Fedor Emelianenko and telling us you signed Sergey Karantanov and Josh Barnett, and Lord only knows when we're ever going to actually see them fight.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, in short, they're kind of the WCW to the UFC's WWE, in that they're pulling, you know, established stars from elsewhere and failing to build their younger stars. I think they have excellent talent. I think Luke Rockhold is one of the top three prospects in the sport. But, you know, it's very unfortunate that he doesn't have fights that could help him progress. I think that's the biggest failure of the organization. You look at Bellator, they have guys who are young, talented prospects they sign. They have your mid-tier veterans who can challenge guys, and then they have their champions. Strikeforce doesn't have that middle gap that bridges those two things together, and it's an absolutely necessary part of your organization. And, you know, I really don't see how they'll be able to continue with this model, you know, unless they really make assertive changes. And, you know, they're definitely capable of improving. I love the new logo. You know, they're talking about good things. You know, yeah, Showtime making fights like Cyborg and Nick Diaz makes absolutely no sense, you know, and it's going to continue to undercut the organization. Dana White had a great rant. It really called into question the quality of the fight Strikeforce is putting on, because while you do have, you know, four knockouts on your card out of four fights, you know, which one of those was a competitive fight to begin with, you know? Is Paul Daly going to really be in trouble against Scott Smith? You know, is Giorgio Gill, is there any reason he should be across from KJ Nunes? You know, KJ Nunes slaughtered him, and that's the reason it happened, was because Giorgio Gill was led to the slaughter. People want to see competitive fights. We don't want to see squash matches. We want to see who is the best of the best. Mm-hmm. And the Strikeforce definitely has the potential to answer that question within their organization. And also something the UFC doesn't have, you know, amongst multiple organizations, but they're not making the right commitments.
You're listening to MMA Sucker Radio here on MMASucker.com and MMACanada.net, and this is State of the Union. And that was just Danny Acosta from Fight Magazine going on about Strikeforce. He's obviously very passionate since he's from the Bay Area. And we also have Damon Martin from MMAweekly.com. And we're talking Strikeforce right now. And speaking of Strikeforce, you guys, and sort of promoting their champions, one thing Strikeforce did well, and of course a lot of UFC fans out there are probably going, you know, were disappointed when they heard this news. Nick Diaz signs a multi-year deal with Strikeforce. That's obviously huge for Strikeforce, but personally I was disappointed because I was hoping to see Nick in the UFC sooner than later. Danny, your thoughts on that?
You know, I think it's good. Nick Diaz is going to get paid a lot of money to fight there, and that's a positive for him. However, it's not exciting as a fan because you don't see them making a commitment to getting him the kind of fights that are compelling. So there's a reason for him to stay there. You know, that's the reason that people feel it's disappointing that Nick Diaz resigns with Strikeforce. You know, people want to see him mix it up with the best of the world, and you have him fighting Cyborg Santos, whose one fight at welterweight was beating the guy that Nick Diaz beat for the title. I mean, it really makes no sense, and hasn't really won since. I mean, he got the TKO over Sakuraba, one of the top tier at Dynamite, but, you know, there's just nothing in terms of momentum that they're doing to help Nick Diaz's career, unfortunately, and that's a big slight, because then Nick Diaz is kept out of the conversation of being a pound-for-pound top 10 fighter in the world when, you know, he's done a lot to prove that he belongs in that conversation. So it's very unfortunate, and you really want to see Strikeforce make the Paul Daly fight. You know, the winner of Tarek Sadafin and Tyron Woodley, in my opinion, is a superior challenger for Nick Diaz's title than Cyborg Santos, you know, so it's really puzzling and upsetting, and you hope that these kind of things are going to be corrected in the future, because they have champions in every division comparable to the UFC. And here's the thing, too, is the one I may be a little iffy on is Rafael Feijão, and who has heard one peep about him since he won that title? You know, that's the story, really, with Strikeforce and Showtime. They're not doing the best to do what they have and make the best of it.
Yeah, Damon, your thoughts on Nick Diaz with that multi-year deal?
I mean, it's a very, very smart move by Strikeforce. I mean, of course, you know, they lock him up, they lock up Robbie Lawler, you know, two of their most exciting guys and two of their more popular guys. So, yeah, it's a very, very smart move for Strikeforce. And then, you know, I agree in the sense of, yeah, we want to see those matchups, but if they don't have him, then, you know, you know, who's to say that he's going to come in the UFC and do well? I mean, Nick had his chances in the UFC before, and he floundered. You know, I mean, he wasn't the Nick Diaz of now. He's a much better fighter now. I think he's improved a lot over the last couple of years. But, you know, he had his chance in the UFC. It didn't work out. He's moving on to different organization now. And if he's happy with Strikeforce, then so be it. You know, I'm on the same boat as everybody else. I'd love to see Nick Diaz against John Fitch or Thiago Alves or, you know, whoever else in the UFC. But there's matchups, you know, from Strikeforce to UFC I'd love to see too, just because it's intriguing. But, you know, the key is getting in the right matchups. They can do it. It's just a matter of them doing it. I mean, like I said earlier, you know, Cyborg has no business being in there with Nick Diaz. It should be Paul Daly. He's a top guy. You signed him. Bring him in. Let him fight Nick Diaz. You know, don't wait around, because when waiting around ends up doing is, you know, just like I said before, best laid plans go to waste. You know, Nick Diaz could lose his next fight. He could get injured. And then we may never see that fight. So, you know, Diaz, you know, KJ Noon's going up. I mean, we got, you know, Gilbert Melendez. By the time he fights again, is going to be out for almost a year. And I understand part of that was self-chosen because he took time off to have his baby and he was injured a little bit. But, you know, right now we don't even have remotely close to being a number one contender. You know, I mean, who's the number one contender in the lightweight division? It was Josh Thompson. He just lost. You know, is it Kawajiri? Is it, you know, KJ Noon? Who is it? And I think that's the problem, is that you have these stars that are potential stars, but you're just not doing the right things with them.
Yeah, and again, the Eddie Alvarez, Gilbert Melendez fight, you know, that's something that needs to happen, and that's the best fight for Gilbert Melendez out there. So Strikeforce is willing to co-promote. They have these fights out there, then they need to do something to make them happen. Even Ben Askren, Nick Diaz, you know, I don't think Ben Askren is ready for a guy like Nick Diaz yet in terms of mixed martial arts. But he brings an incredible wrestling pedigree that is really hypeable for a fight. And it's a tough stylistic matchup for Nick Diaz, the same way that Tyrone Woodley will be in terms of bringing the wrestling. And, you know, that's the one part of Nick's game that's calling the question. I will say that I disagree with Damon in saying that, you know, Nick had his chance in the UFC and it didn't work out, because he actually exited on a win. He beat Gleison Tabal at UFC 64, rather. Or 65, bad intentions with George St. Pierre and Matt Hughes, too. And Dana often says that, you know, he cut him after Joe Riggs and the hospital incident, which is, you know, not factually correct.
Yeah, the thing with that about the UFC is, I'm not saying that I wouldn't like to see him back. I'd love to see him back, but I'm just saying I understand why Nick Diaz made the decision he made to stay with Strikeforce, you know what I mean? There's no guarantees with the UFC. I mean, we assume that if he left, the UFC would snatch him up and give him a chance, but we just don't know. So I understand, you know, Nick Diaz is signing for some security, and obviously they're going to give him a pretty hefty payday because they want to kind of make him one of the faces of their organization. So, I'm just saying I understand why, you know, he stuck with Strikeforce and why they offered to pay him what they're probably paying him.
Yeah, absolutely, and I agree with you. And here's the thing, is that it's good for Nick Diaz from that standpoint, but at the same time, you have to wonder what the promotional floundering they've had with multiple stars on their roster, is it the best move for Nick Diaz's career? You know, are they going to treat him like Jake Shields and kind of just indifferently promote him? Or you know, are they going to give him a real solid push? You know, they had a kind of mini 24/7 series. Esther Lynn and Casey Linden produced. It was excellent, available online. Get some KJ Noon fights. So, you know, you want to see them put that on their station, you know? It's really that simple. They have all this airtime and haven't made a real commitment to mixed martial arts the way they could. You know, they need preview shows, recap shows, and I think that's another thing, is if you have 12 good shows a year as opposed to 20, then you can put your undercard fights as repackaged shows that showcases other talent. But when you're having amateur fights fill up the majority of your card and guys who you never intend on having back in your organization, then you're not going to have that extra content available.
Mm-hmm. Awesome, guys. We're actually running up against the clock here, so I'm going to go to the final question here, and we'll start with Damon. Damon, doesn't matter what organization, what matchups would you like to see in 2011?
You know, I think like everybody else, you know, there's some dream. I mean, I'm really looking forward to GSP and Jake Shields. I know a lot of people are not ultra hyped about that fight, but I think it's going to be a great fight. I think Jake Shields, you know, really is going to be one of the toughest challenges that GSP has. So I'm really looking forward to that fight. You know, I am looking forward to when we finally get to see Cain Velasquez and Junior Dos Santos. I'm excited to see Anthony Pettis in the UFC. I'm very amped up to see what the featherweights and bantamweights are able to do in the UFC this year. So I think Dominic Cruz and Uriah Faber down the road is going to be great. You know, I think seeing, you know, more of those type matchups. My ultimate matchup right now would be, I would love to see Hatsu Hayoki come over from Japan and fight Jose Aldo. I think that'd be my favorite fight at featherweight this year if it could ever happen. So that's a fight I'd love to see. And then, you know, in Strikeforce, you know, I'd love to see Eddie Alvarez and Gilbert Melendez. That's a fight that's out there that I hope happens. You know, Nick Diaz, Paul Daly. And then, you know, like I've said a million times over, I want to see these heavyweights fight in Strikeforce. So I think Fabricio Werdum, Alistair Overeem, March in Ohio, let's make it happen.
Danny?
Yeah, you know, there are a ton that Damon said that I would absolutely love to see. George St. Pierre, Jake Shields is one I'm very excited about. I think Katsuhiko Jose Aldo would be amazing. And I'd love to see the Iron Broomstick, you know, arrive and have Jose Aldo trying to avenge his teammate's loss. Clay Guida, Benson Henderson, I've been saying it since the Showtime Series kick happened. The reason being that Clay Guida is the only person I could think crazy enough to get up from that kick, aside from Benson Henderson. So I'd love to see how a scrap between those two would unfold. You know, I'd really like to see Sean Sherk, Kamal Shalrus, or Sean Sherk, Jim Miller. I think those are great fights. I think the winner, Carlos Condit, Chris Lytle, should be stepping up into title contention at welterweight. Very exciting guys. Yeah, I'd like to see the loser of that fight actually fight John Howard if he stays at 170. Dominic Cruz, I think, you know, you can't call it Dominic Cruz Uriah Faber quite yet because he Wyland's a very tough opponent for Uriah Faber. He's going to be fighting him at UFC 129, if I remember correctly, that date. I think Dominic Cruz has established himself as one of the top 10 pound-for-pound fighters in the world, and we're going to see him have some quality scraps. You know, he made Scott Jorgensen look like he wasn't even in the same cage with them.
Yeah.
I'd love to see what Joe Warren's doing next. You know, he's the Bellator champion, and I'd love to see him mix it up with some quality guys. I'd like to see any of the Bellator champions, maybe except for their heavyweight guy, come in and fight in Strikeforce and fight the Strikeforce champions. I'd love to see Jorge Santiago Jacare. I put that as one of the top three highest fights on my wish list. You know, there's just so many options, and the merger has done so many amazing things for what we might see. I think Brad Pickett is someone to watch in 2011. Kitty Yamamoto, Demetrius Johnson's excellent. And one that I really like to see is actually Demetrius Johnson and Joseph Benavidez for the 125-pound inaugural title. I think that's a fight that could happen in 2011. You know, if Demetrius Johnson stays tough,
yeah,
he's someone who wants to be done at 125, and Joseph Benavidez can make that weight. And, you know, he's had a title shot at 135. It's something that he could probably do and be the marquee star at the division. So that's a fight I'd hope to see as well. You know, it's a wrong question to ask me because I'll keep on going, but thank you for having me.
Oh, my God, you got me excited, man. 2011 has begun, and there's a lot of great fights coming down the pipe and some dream fights we'd like to see. Danny Costa from Fight Magazine. Danny, any shout-outs you want to make?
Yeah, I'd just like to thank you guys for having me. Thanks to Damon for taking the time as well. Thanks to the fans. You know, I see myself as just a medium between the fighters and the fans, you know, getting the word out there for you guys. So follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/AcostaIsLegend. That's me, LSDA is legend. And, you know, I'm always on there. You can check me out on Sirius Satellite Radio, Sirius 125 weekly starting here in 2011, ESPN 1450 in Reno, which is also available. I'll be posting that on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff. YouTube.com/Fight Magazine, the videos that I produce. We pick up the issue of Fight Magazine monthly. My fingerprints are all over that little sucker. So appreciate
yeah.
you guys having me.
Absolutely, Danny. It's been great. Damon, thank you very much for coming on the show. And same as Danny, any shout-outs?
Yeah, same as Danny, man. I just appreciate all the fans that support us. And MMAWeekly.com has been around for a long time. And we appreciate mm-hmm. all the fans that have supported us and, you know, voted us as one of the best news sites over the last few years. So we really appreciate that. You can check me out on MMAWeeklyRadio.com Monday through Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern. I know this week we're going to have Herschel Walker, Sean McCorkle, Frankie Edgar, so we're going to have a lot of guys on this week. So check me out on there. Follow me on Twitter, at Damon Martin. I try to post a lot of stuff on there. And, you know, just again, thanks for everyone for the support. Try to continue to do our best in 2011.
Excellent, excellent, guys. Thank you very much for joining us, and we'll definitely have you on again one day. Thanks, boys.
Thank you.
That was Danny Acosta from Fight Magazine and Damon Martin from MMAWeekly.com. And that was our monthly State of the Union show. Jeremy, what'd you think?
I thought it was great. Those guys can ramble.
Oh, man, it was great. You know, Danny, obviously very passionate about Strikeforce. Obviously because he lives in the San Fran Bay Area there. So, Yeah, man, it was great. I thought it was some really good insight. And that's why I love having these shows, is because, you know, normally we just have interviews with fighters. Fighters will come on, we'll talk about them, which is great too, because we've gotten to know a lot of great guys. But then to do this monthly thing where we can just talk, you know, MMA, just shoot the shit about, like, you know, matchups or, you know, what you see this organization doing. I just get stoked about it, man. It gets exciting. And speaking of exciting, I kind of mentioned it at the top of the show, but you won the MMA Sucka Duel. So, first off, you know, as any great sports reporter would do, would ask you the question, how do you feel? How do you feel about the win, Jeremy Brand?
I feel great. I was a little nervous during that last match, especially in the first round.
The main event?
Yeah, oh, okay. The main event. I mean, Maynard had Frankie wobbly a little bit there.
Yeah.
And you even said to me, hey, Jer, I think you're going to be doing some waxing.
Yeah, exactly.
Luckily, it didn't happen. I mean, I wouldn't have minded it. It would have been a funny video to have on the site, but we're going to get lazy with his red stripe in his hair.
Yeah, he's going to be doing something. Be interesting to see what happens here in the next week or so. We'll post that on MMASucka.com. By all means, people, visit our site at MMASucka.com, but also join our Facebook page, our fan page. It's kind of growing slowly, and we have a good time with it. We give away stuff once in a while. We gave away we actually just had this, like, martial arts movie just over Christmas holidays. We had this best martial arts movie sort of article going, and people could vote on their favorite martial arts movie, and Bloodsport won.
You know, great movie.
Yeah, wasn't surprised, and we gave a couple of copies of Bloodsport away. And join our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/MMASucka, and join us, and you'll get to hear some stuff before we put it on our site sometime. So
definitely also subscribe to us on iTunes.
Yep.
iTunes.com/MMASuckaRadio.
Yep. That way you're always on the iTunes. You always can hear us every Sunday night at 7 o'clock Pacific. That's 10 o'clock Eastern time. And man, great show tonight as always, and always a good time. And next week we've got some guests lined up. You don't know for sure who yet, but probably...
We got some things underway.
You got some things underway? Yeah. Okay, there you go. Producer Jeremy got some things underway. Awesome, everyone. Thank you for listening. And again, this was State of the Union on MMA Sucka Radio on MMASucka.com and MMACanada.net. Brought to you by Clinch Custom Mouthguards. Go to clenchguards.com. That's clenchguards.com. Check them out. You got to get a nice mouthguard for your mouth. Get something. Protect your grill. I'm out. Thank you for joining us. It'll be a kick-ass 2011.